Listen to the Pop and Joe show every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday at 12 noon at the 937thefan.com contesting page. Donnie Chedrick with you here on 93.7 The Fan until 10. It is Thursday here at Sports and Social Steel City at Live Casino, which means 7-7-7 wing night, 7 wings for $7, which started about 90 minutes ago at 7 p.m. I still have some wings here next to me. Phenomenal in the early going, the ones that I've tried so far. The wings are fresh, never frozen, great flavors, and I can attest to that with the ones that I've tried so far. Something that was not great, the Pirates at the trade deadline, and we're going to talk about that right now. This trade talk brought to you by Globe Airport Parking, and we are going to do that with our guy Noah Hiles from the Post-Gazette. Noah, just your full reaction to everything the Pirates did at the trade deadline. If you want to go on a little rant, feel free, whatever you want to do here. Just your thoughts on what Ben Cherington and company did over the last 48-ish hours.
I'll just quote the great Kevin Stallings and say, I wouldn't call it great. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. This whole month, all we were told was that the goal was to improve the offense, to give the team a better shot to compete in 2026. And in return, in the end, they acquired 9 players, 3 of whom are in AAA or going to be reporting to AAA, and 6 who are going to be playing in either high A or low A. I don't understand how anything got better. Oh, and they're also going to be paying $4.7 million for 3 veterans on expiring deals to continue playing for a last-place team when I know for a fact all 3 had some teams interested in them.
Yeah, can we jump to that before we get into the individual trades? I mean, I thought it was a foregone conclusion that Andrew Heaney, Tommy Pham, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, I thought it was easy. Okay, those guys are gone, expiring deals. The only guy, correct me if I'm wrong, that was on an expiring deal that got dealt was Caleb Ferguson. I mean,
Frazier as well.
Oh, yeah, Frazier, yeah. I mean, that one was a couple weeks ago, which, I mean, hell, that might end up being what looks like the best trade of this entire deadline period. I'm not even kidding. I think it might so far. But why hold on to Heaney, IKF, and Pham?
I can't begin to explain it. We asked Cherington about it. It was weird because I just got done with the Zoom talking to him, and I don't want to misquote him. I'm waiting for all the quotes to be transcribed. But in the question prior, he talked about wanting to move certain guys to open up opportunities for younger players who he thought were going to be a bigger part of the team in 2026. And then I followed that by asking him, okay, so why are you continuing to roster 3 guys who are on expiring contracts? What do they provide? And like, how does that not open up opportunities? But he just said he felt that they were better for the team to hang it, to keep them around. And they didn't get the value that they wanted for any of those players. I mean, he used the example of moving Bailey Falter to create an opening in the starting rotation. And he said they felt that they needed to move at least one starting pitcher. And it's kind of confusing to me that they would move a guy with 3 years of control and better numbers instead of Andrew Heaney, who's on an expiring deal and who's just a worse baseball player right now than Bailey Falter. He didn't have a lot of good answers. He said Falter had a higher trade return, so that's why they chose to move him instead of Heaney. But, I mean, I don't think they got the next Shohei Ohtani for Bailey Falter. So, like, I don't understand why they did that. I can't give you a logical answer. That is a foregone conclusion, not only for Pirates. I know that the Pirates are always sellers at the deadline, it seems, and this routine of selling away your 1-year contracts is it's an annual circumstance here in Pittsburgh. But, like, this is something that's a foregone conclusion anywhere in baseball. I had agents I had other team employees. They're texting me, asking me, family members of players, what in the world, why did they do that? And I had no answer to give them, Donnie.
I mean, I'm really just confused at him saying, well, we didn't get the value that we wanted. I mean, I'm not going to tell any of you guys who cover the team how to do your jobs, Noah, because I'm not in those settings. But I think a funny but fair rebuttal to that would have been, well, then how do you explain any of the other trades you just made? Because I don't see much of the...
That was his logic, was they traded, everyone that they traded was for the value that they thought they were appropriate for. And if they got the value offered to them that they felt Mitch Keller was worth, then Mitch Keller would have been traded. They felt David Bednar's value was met, and they traded him for the number 8 prospect in the Yankees organization. Yeah, but they didn't get that value met on Tommy Pham, a guy who since June 22nd has like the 9th highest OPS in baseball and is on an expiring deal and has playoff experience. I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, it's really fair, and there were a couple of people that called in the first hour of the show, and it's hard to disagree. Noah, it felt like this was a slap in the face from the front office.
I mean, I don't know if it's a slap in the face. I just think it's more of a continuation of what we've seen from these guys, which is they think they're the only people who think this way in baseball. When other teams are looking at what they're doing and thinking, "What? I don't understand this." I mean, when I go to winter meetings or the All-Star game and people talk to me about the Pirates, people ask me, that one of the most frequently asked questions I get is, what are they doing over there? Agents ask me that. And it's days like today where you just know, it's like those questions are going to continue. Like, they believe they made their farm system deeper. They believe they opened up opportunities for players like Jared Triolo and Johan Oviedo to get major league opportunities to be better for 2026. Both of those guys have played multiple years in the majors, by the way. I mean, they have money, more money theoretically to spend. If you include all of the money that's going to go away when the year ends and IKF, Heaney, and Pham go into free agency and what they save from Hayes going away and Bednar, they're going to have like north of $40 million. But there are way more problems to be fixed than $40 million of big league payroll. And I guess moving Mitch Keller makes that $55 million. But, I mean, this is a general manager who hasn't signed a multi-year free agent in Pittsburgh in 6 years. This is a general manager whose highest paid free agent is $10 million. Again, on an annual value, Aroldis Chapman.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a guy I asked. I said, is it fair to assume that you guys are going to be more aggressive in free agency? And he didn't really just give the simple answer of yes. It sounds like this focus is still going to be on trades, on internal development, and third on that list is going to be free agency. That's not me suggesting that they're just going to pocket all the money that they save, but I think a logical explanation for what you do with the money here would to be go all in on an Alex Bregman, if he's available, or a Gino Suarez or something, because you have so much payroll that you could dedicate a big contract to. But it doesn't seem like that's happening. So I don't know.
What happened with the idea of Owen Casey being somebody in a return if Mitch Keller was dangled out there? Like, was that... That now just feels like a pipe dream because
I think they wanted more than an Owen Casey. I think they wanted a hitter equivalent for Mitch Keller, and I think that that's fine. Like, I think Mitch Keller can get you a better player than Owen Casey. I really do. And I'm not the only person who thinks that. I know the Pirates think that. And I'm no problem because Mitch has so many remaining years of control. If you move him in December and you get a big leaguer, not a prospect, not a top 100 prospect, but an actual big leaguer, a guy who you know what you can expect production-wise from, someone who's been an established hitter at this level for 3-4 seasons, that's what Mitch Keller should get you. And if you get that, that's fine. I don't care that it took a couple extra months to get. If they were to get, you know, Jarren Duran, for example, Jarren Duran arriving in November as opposed to now makes no difference in the grand scheme of things because they're not achieving anything as a team in the next couple of months. So I have no problem with that. But it's the other things where it's like, okay, well, Bednar, could you have gotten an Owen Casey for him? Could you have gotten something better for him? And if not, then why did you trade him? Did you get the absolute most for him? Did you get the absolute most for some of these other guys? I don't know. Or could you have gotten more by packaging Bednar and Keller together? I don't know. I mean, there's just a lot of confusion there. So I wouldn't write off the idea of getting something good for Mitch Keller, better than a top 100 prospect. But again, that isn't going to fix everything. The other assets that they needed to move weren't moved properly, in my opinion.
Yeah, the thing that sucks, Noah, and we're talking to Noah Hiles, who covers the Pirates for the Post-Gazette on the heels of the 2025 trade deadline. I think the thing that is tough to sell there, you saying, and I'm not blaming you, I wouldn't rule out getting a good return for Mitch Keller. There's not much faith from anybody who follows or is a fan of this team that they will get a good return for anybody at this rate.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
they would have found a way, and I actually say this with pretty strong conviction, I am convinced they would have found a way, if they actually did trade Paul Skeens, they would have screwed it up.
Maybe.
They would have somehow ended up with the team's, like, sixth or seventh prospect and, like, four or five throw-ins, dudes who are 26 years old and are playing in double-A ball.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I don't know. I mean, to me, I think the bigger story here is just, like, nothing happened. I mean, the Greensboro Grasshoppers, Donnie, they're geared up for a deep playoff run. So the South Atlantic League better look out because High A is locked and loaded. But I don't know. I mean, I think that's where, like, the confusion comes on my end because it's like, aside from Bednar, they didn't really get rid of anything of substance, right? Like, I don't think the Hayes move, honestly, I had not a ton of problems with. I don't think you could have gotten more for it.
I did not expect that to be the trade that I was most positive about coming out of this.
Yeah, I thought it was fine. I was fine. I was like, you know what? You got a top 10 prospect. You got Rodgers, who you're able to flip for another prospect, although I thought that probably could have been a better return than what it was. And you got Hayes' money off the books. I know some people will view that as a salary dump. I kind of view it more as you're calling it what it was. This was not the player that you signed up for. And the longer you kept going on with this charade that Ke'Bryan had a chance to be the player they thought he was going to be when he signed that extension, the worse it was going to be for both parties involved. So I thought that was a smart move, cutting ties. I mean, kind of calling a spade a spade. I had no problem with that move. But in every other move, like, I mean, they weren't going to get anything great for, you know, Caleb Ferguson or whoever else. And, I mean, the Bailey Falter thing is just more puzzling because if you moved him, then why did you not move Andrew Heaney? Like, if you had to keep one, why would you not keep the guy who has better numbers and better control? I don't think the return is anything amazing, but I don't think Bailey Falter had a ton of trade value to begin with. It's just more like everything they did was contradictory to what they were planning to do. And I don't know. It's kind of, like I said, yeah, they deepened their low level of their farm system. That wasn't the intended goal stated. And for an organization continually criticized for being cheap, looks like they went out of their way to keep the payroll higher for the last 2 months of a season where they're going to finish in last place again. Good for them.
Yet this didn't really do them any favors just because.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, do you think those guys want to be here still? Do you think IKF and Heaney and Tommy Pham are jumping from joy in their hotel room right now?
If I was any of those three guys, and I would think anybody that was in their position is thinking, oh, this is great. I'm going to get moved to a team that has a chance to make the playoffs, and at minimum, they will play exciting baseball in the final month of the season. I would actually be, like, pissed off if I'm one of those three guys.
I mean, yeah,
that dude, I'm still here.
Tommy Pham played in the ALDS last year in the World Series 2 years ago. Andrew Heaney pitched against Tommy Pham in the World Series 2 years ago. And IKF played playoff ball. He played in big markets. Played in New York, played in Texas, played in Toronto. Those teams are always all in. These guys did not sign up. I mean, they signed a contract, or in IKF's case, he was traded here. They knew what they were getting into. But I think it was very logical that all of them anticipated that they'd be playing for a little bit more than just, hey, let's give the young guys some mentorship so maybe they'll be better in 2026. I think that they thought they had a little bit more to play for than that when they take the field tomorrow.
Why did they seemingly settle on what they did for David Bednar to the Yankees?
Because they think that's the best offer. And I'll be clear with this. You know, prospect lists aren't the end-all, be-all. There are a lot of guys who are top 100 prospects who don't pan out. I mean, hell, there are a handful of them on this roster now.
Yep.
But, I mean, I don't know. When you hear them say it with so much confidence, like, we like our package better than some of the top 100 guys that we were looking at. Like, okay, you know, if an organization that had a better track record in trade returns were saying this, I would think, oh, they're going to fleece a team. I don't think that notion applies to this organization.
No, they only get fleeced by teams. I mean, somebody who actually pulled off some pretty good ones. Now, he goes out on a sour note because of the Chris Archer debacle, but I mean, moves that got made by Neil Huntington at deadlines, even at times, mostly when they were sellers, like you saw them end up prospering from those in the long run.
Wait, just their names?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you think if the Pirates had an asset that was equivalent to Andrew McCutchen in 2018, do you think that they would have got a Brian Reynolds in return this regime?
No.
Right. Like, I don't know. I mean, we could speculate here and there, but I mean, and don't get me wrong. I mean, the last regime wasn't perfect. They had probably more L's than W's. But, I mean, the way, yeah, he said with confidence that this was the best, they liked this trade package better than anything else they were offered. And I don't know exactly what they were offered, but I know they're asking prices for two teams that were finalists for Bednar, and those asking prices included top 100 prospects. So I don't know exactly if those offers were met. But in the end, they were asking for a top 100 prospect for this guy, and they settled. They said, didn't settle. The package that they chose was the headliner of it was the number 8 prospect in the Yankee system, who I've heard is going to be outside the top 10 in the Pirate system when the new rankings are updated.
Now, one thing that does look good, we go back to the Hayes trade. I believe MLB already has the Pirates list updated, and they have Stafura, if I'm saying his name correctly, at 7, I think. So, I mean, hey, that and the fact that they were able to then flip Taylor Rogers, which I was hoping they would do, again, that looks like the best move they made, Noah, and I did not expect to say that Ke'Bryan Hayes would get them the best return in 2025.
Honestly, I had no problem with any of the moves they made, excluding today. Like, I thought the Frazier trade
was
fine.
Yeah, today sucked.
Yeah, today was bad. From my personal and professional opinion, today was a bad day for their trade activity. And you know what? If whoever they got, you know, what's his name? Let me pull up the list here. If Brian Sanchez or Callan Moss end up hitting the game-winning home run in the NLCS in a couple of years, then you can happily replay this audio and point out how dumb I am. Won't be the first time someone's done that. But I don't know. Like, half of these prospects they acquired aren't even on a top 50. And the other ones, it seemed rather underwhelming. Everything they did today seemed either underwhelming or very puzzling. The things that they did and the things that they didn't do.
People have also pointed out that Flores is Rule 5 eligible this offseason.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that funny? I mean, you could have...
They didn't do the research into that one either, I guess.
Well, I mean, maybe they did. Like, I mean, that's fine. Like, who knows what the Rule 5 order is? Another team could have got him. I mean, you don't know if the Yankees were going to roster him. He's in AAA now. Like, he might have been rostered by the Yankees anyway. And I've heard good reviews about Flores. Like, I don't anticipate Flores being terrible. But, I mean, you just traded three people for a first baseman in December. And your two catchers are a 1-1 and a 1-2. And then Andy Rodriguez, if he ever gets his elbow healthy, is another top 100 prospect, former top 100 prospect. So where do those pieces fit? Like, who are they giving up on? Who in, I don't know, it seems like a big bank. A lot of eggs in that basket.
I hate to say it, Noah, you sound like a defeated man.
It's not defeated, it's just like, I don't know, I just spent the last month sending thousands of texts, making hundreds of phone calls, talking with people in the Pirates organization, talking with people in other organizations, talking with at least 12 different agents off the top of my head, talking with players, talking with scouts, talking to a whole bunch of people, trying to get an idea of what the heck they were going to do. And I thought I had a pretty clear idea. And because it was reflected by so many different perspectives. And it seems like they just didn't do what they intended. So, okay, cool.
Noah, check out his stuff with the Post-Gazette. He covers the Buccos. Noah, another series this weekend. Thanks for hopping on to recap what was the Pirates 2025 trade deadline. Thanks, buddy.
3 days of Pirates Rockies feels like an appropriate reward for today. Thanks for having me on, Donnie.
There he goes, Noah Hiles from the PG. Follow us on Twitter at 93.7 The Fan. That's brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Coming up, Alan Saunders, Steelers reporter from Pittsburgh Sports Now. He will join us for the 9 o'clock hour to recap some of Steelers training camp so far. And speaking of training camp, show proof of a training camp ticket and receive happy hour drink pricing where you can get an ice-cold Miller Lite for only $4, or try the tailgate package, which includes a nacho platter, 24 boneless wings, and 100-ounce Miller Lite beer towers for just $65, and that is at Sports and Social Steel City at Live Casino, which is where I am sitting right now. Alan Saunders will join me in just a few minutes. Fan weather is brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. Great weather tomorrow, sunny, temps in the low 80s. Similar weather out here in Greensburg and in Latrobe. Alan Saunders joins the show next on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.